Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name's Josh, and I'm an entrepreneur traveling around Orlando, having conversations with entrepreneurs and founders, investors, and those who help support the entrepreneurial ecosystem here, from people who help buy and sell businesses to invest in business. On today's episode, we're going to have a conversation with Chris Diglio, who is a partner at Calder Associates, and I'll let you kind of break in, Chris, of who you are and what you do. But guys, pay attention, especially ladies and gentlemen in the audience, pay attention, especially if you have a service-based business. We're going to cover some topics on the value of your business and one day if you choose to sell your business. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Chris to the show. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey Josh, how you doing? I appreciate you having me on. It's certainly an honor to be on your show. I've listened to your podcasts, and they're certainly very interesting. So hopefully I can keep the trend going with a good show for you.
Awesome. Well, between you and my mom, we have a great listening audience base, but we should have some fun, Chris. So before we hit record, you and I were talking about some of your background and the experience that you had building and growing businesses. But why don't you give us a little idea about who you are and what you do now?
Sure. I've been a business broker here in Central Florida for 20 years. This is actually my 20th year in the business. So at 48 years old, I'm still one of the young business brokers. But by my experience, I'm an old timer, because typically people get into business brokerage as a second or third career after they've sold their business. And they realize, well, maybe I'll sell other people's businesses. And they typically get in maybe in their mid-50s, early 60s, and do it for a number of years and then go on to retirement. So my story was just a little different than that. I got in at a younger age. My father was in the business brokerage business. He was a serial entrepreneur, always looking at businesses, and he was retired at a young age. And when we moved from New York to Florida in 1985, you know, my father was looking to buy businesses. And someone said to him, he goes, look, Chris, you ask, his name is Chris also, you ask all the right questions, why don't you become a business broker? And he said, well, okay, I'll take a look at that. Let me try. So he became a business broker. In the state of Florida, you have to have a real estate license to be a business broker. And what he found out through going through the process of getting his real estate license was there was less than one page on how to be a business broker and what to do for you to be able to on a business brokerage in the real estate school. So now he got his real estate license, had one page of knowledge on business brokerage, but he was a business broker. And so he looked at that and realized there was a real opportunity to help the industry as a whole to better training. So within 1 year as a business broker, he became the number one broker in the entire state of Florida. And what did he do that was so special? He just treated them like he would be treated. He looked at so many businesses to buy that he, when he was working with people that were looking to sell, he knew what the buyers were looking for. He knew the questions that needed to be answered. So he just set up that program and you know, trained people like myself how to do it what he called the right way.
Got it. So you kind of grew up around a serial entrepreneur. What is it like having, being a child of a serial entrepreneur, seeing your dad do this, and then one day transitioning yourself? Like, walk us through what it's like to be the child of an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur.
The child of an entrepreneur is always interesting, right?
Yeah.
Anyone that works for somebody thinks that, well, you own a business, you live the lifestyle. You're making all this money and how great it is. Well, when you're behind the scenes and you're living on that side of it, you have a father that works 80 to 100 hours a week and you maybe not see him as often as you'd like, or a mother that does the same thing. You have a parent that works more hours than they should, because running a business, it's not like at 5 o'clock when the lights shut off that your business shuts off. You're continually worrying and wondering, and it's not just yourself, but it's the people that work for you. So it's very interesting. And then not only, you know, to be involved with the family business and see that, being the namesake, being named after your father, right? So the expectations are that much higher, because nothing you're ever going to do is going to meet the standards. Now, my father would say, well, if I let you get away with something, then everyone's going to think they can get away with it. So he was 10 times harder on me than he would ever be on anyone else. But I certainly learned to appreciate that the older I got. I might not have appreciated that when I was younger, but I learned a lot of lessons. I got to see a lot of different things. My father in New York was the largest independent beer distributor in the state of New York. And that started from You know, he grew up in the slums of Brooklyn, and he built himself up and worked really hard, went to the Army, got out of the services, and started a business, and continually looked to grow. So I've watched that growing up, the different businesses he was in, and the challenges, and what I noticed was the philosophy, right? And the procedures. There's a philosophy to every business, right? You could work hard and you could do the right thing, but you know, do you have the right people in place? Do you allow your people to thrive and do the things that they need to do to be successful? Are you running your business, or is your business running you, right? And so we learned, my brother and my sister and I, we learned a lot of lessons by watching my father do this. And before I got into business brokerage, I was in other businesses also. And then when I transitioned to business brokerage, I was ready to work with my father at a different level at 28 years old than when I was 20 or 21, where we were a lot more combative and butting heads.
Yeah.
I learned after I was in my own business, apart from him, that, the light bulb went off. There were some challenges. Now I understand the pressures Dad was under and the things he was doing. And we worked together a whole lot better after I was out on my own than prior to being out on my own.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So my father is an entrepreneur. And when we're kids looking at our father, you know, like, we get to see behind the scenes of what goes on being an entrepreneur. And, you know, when we then one day run our own business or help a ton of other people sell their business, we start to get exposed to the pains and the pressures of being entrepreneurs and being business owners. When you made this transition, what were some of the big ahas? You said, okay, there was a big difference from 21 to 28, some maturity there and some life lessons. Like, what were some of the ahas in business that happened in those times?
Well, the ahas were the responsibilities involved, right? Yeah. And money just doesn't grow on trees, and business just doesn't come knocking on your door. There's actually a lot of work that goes involved. Like, between 20 and 28, you know, I was living in Georgia, and I moved to Georgia because I was involved with a church group that was based out of Georgia and was an international ministry, and they traveled around the world. So between 20 and 28, I did things that I look back on now that I can't believe we actually did. I mean, we went to Colorado, and 1 week we built a church from ground up. And so, and I was under a wonderful leader and a pastor. His name was George Pike. He's since passed away a number of years ago, but the life lessons I learned from him and the life lessons I learned as my father really contributed to what's going to happen in business, to the aha moment. So the biggest aha I got into getting into business brokerage and getting into a business of my own was I was in the paint contracting and remodeling business in Georgia. And my father would always say to me, what are you going to do? You know, come back to Florida. This is a great business. I'm like, why? I'm doing great. The business is booming. It's going so well. And then back in 1998, we had this little thing called the El Nino effect that went through, and it rained every single day. And although I would call the customers, so the biggest aha moment in business, in being a business owner, sometimes is the accountability to the people that you work for, because you take their money and you sign a contract, especially in a service business. So we talked to them and said, yes, we're going to paint your house. We're going to paint your shopping center. However, if it's raining outside, in good conscience, we can't come out and put a product on the side of your house or your building, even though if you feel like it's dry, it rained an hour ago, it's not going to adhere. It's not going to stick to the surface. And 2 years later, a year later, it's going to peel off and you're going to be very upset with me. So every day for like 45 days, I called everyone on the list. It's raining today. We're not going to be out there. And they were as nice as could be. Thank you so much, Cress. We appreciate that you're calling us. So wonderful. So nice to deal with. But boy, the first sunny day that came, all of them were calling me, where are you? Those nice people weren't so nice anymore. I said to them, don't you remember the last 45 days I've been calling you, letting you know that it's another day further out that you're going to be in the schedule? So what I did over the next 90 days, we went through and we tried to complete every job that we can. And we finally were done probably about 120 days later. And I decided, you know what, Dad? I'm coming back to Florida, and maybe there's something else that I want to do that I'll be more passionate about. And I decided to get into business brokerage. And one thing that the biggest mistake I made, I was getting into a profession to help people sell their businesses. And I exited my business that was valuable the worst possible way. I didn't sell it. I just basically shut it down. Back then, the listening audience will laugh. We had beepers, right? Pagers.
Yeah.
So I turned over my pager to one of my competitors and said, hey, just pay me a referral fee on any job that you get. That lasted a year. And then I never saw another dime, because you figure, well, he's in Florida. I'm not going to give him the money anymore. And so people say, what did you learn as a business broker? I go, well, I learned that if I was going to become a business broker, I probably should have sold my own business the proper way rather than all those hard years of work just basically giving it away for nothing. So the aha moments were the responsibilities involved, you know, the not just to yourself, but to the people that work for you, and just all that goes into it, that it's just never ending. And I had a greater appreciation for my father and love him even more because of that. And I think the person I love even more than my father going through that was my mother for putting up with my father and all the things she had to deal with while he was away. And she was stuck with three kids at home that were not the easiest kids in the world. So my aha moments were, you know, it's a real responsibility and it's a bigger undertaking than anybody would ever imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely not easy. Yeah, I remember the days of having a pager and a pocket full of quarters, so you had to like pull off the road and call someone real quick. But all right, so at age 28, you decided that you wanted to move back to Orlando in Florida and become a business broker like Dad. You got your real estate license, and you realized that there's not a lot of training in becoming a business broker, right? There's that's part of the licensure is going through real estate, but how did you start to learn about the process? Because for the audience listening in, Chris, he's one of the trainers for IBB, International Brokers.
International Business Brokers Association, the IBBA, yes.
Yeah. So you train new business brokers coming in how to become a broker. But how did you learn at age 28 how to evaluate a business, how to sell a business, how to buy a business? How did you learn that?
Well, think about this. So I'm 28 years old. I've never sold a business before in my life. And now I'm going to walk into someone's office who's run that business or ran that business for 20 years, 30 years, might be, you know, almost twice my age. And they're looking at me like, what are you going to do and how are you going to do it? So I couldn't go in anywhere and talk about me. So the word I learned real quick was we. Yeah. We are able to do this. And as a comp, so I joined a large company. My dad's company at the time was the largest business broker in the state of Florida, brokerage firm. Since then, it's more now of a boutique firm that he's retired and I've taken over, and I use that company for other purposes that we could talk later. But I remember saying, okay, how am I going to get trained? What am I going to do? And my dad put a great training program in place, you know, that trained all new agents on what to do, how to do, why to do, right? It's not just telling someone what to do or how to do, but why? What's the philosophy behind it? Why is it that you do things a certain way? And then he also said to me, Chris, you need to get involved with the IBBA, the International Business Brokers Association, because they have certifications called a CBI, which is a Certified Business Intermediary. And the sister association, the M&A Source, they have a designation called a MNAMI, a Merger and Acquisition Master Intermediary. He goes, if you want to be great at what we're doing, he goes, you need to get those designations. He said, you need to be at the top of the industry and get the designations that are meaningful within the industry. So I joined the IBBA and knowing nothing other than the training I had, which was great. And I took a lot of courses. And in 2 years, I was able to receive my CBI designation. And I got very involved in the IBBA, and I started proctoring and grading the CBI exams. And instead of being the guy that showed up for the hour to get credit for doing it towards your recertification, I was the first one there and the last one to leave. Well, 3 years later, when they needed someone to oversee the CBI designation, they came to me because I worked very hard, not because of who I was or what I was, just a little guy from Orlando, right? And then from there, I became education committee chair, and I made the board, and then I was able to become the chairman of the largest business brokers association in the world, the IBBA. And the great thing I love about that is my father was chairman many years prior to me. We're the only father and son to ever be chairman of the association. So I learned through the IBBA, and most of what I have today and what I've been able to do is because of the IBBA, and that's why I'm so involved. I'm a certified instructor for them because I want to give back. So the failure rate in business brokerage is horrific. Probably 9 out of every 10 brokers that get into business brokerage fail. And it's just a difficult business. So a couple of years ago, I wrote a course for the IBBA because I got so tired of people saying, I want to survive my first year. And I go, why do you want to survive your first year? You want to thrive your first year. So I wrote a course that was initially titled Thriving, Not Surviving Your First Year in Business Brokerage. And it's an 8-hour course. And I wrote it, and now it's an online course for the IBBA, and it just helps people that get into the business that have one page of training from licensing states like Florida to say, okay, there's more to it than this, and I want to really be able to succeed at this. So hopefully I've done a little part in being able to help those individuals.
Why do 9 out of 10 business brokers fail their first year?
Well, probably because of people like myself, where I was in that same situation. I would have failed my first year being undercapitalized, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have enough money to be able to be in this business. See, nothing happens fast in business brokerage. You know, not to undermine what a house sale is, but you could literally list a house today and have a buyer tomorrow. It doesn't happen all the time, but you could. You can make money selling houses in 30, 45, 60 days if you're lucky, right? I'm not going to say if you're good, but if you're lucky, it does take an element of luck. But business brokerage is very difficult. Such a, you know, you go and you meet with someone. Let's say my first day as a business broker, I meet you, right? Mm-hmm. And you love me so much, you list your business with me. And then tomorrow we find a buyer, which is not going to happen, but let's just say we do. So 2 days into a business brokerage, I have a listing and I find a buyer. Now it's under contract. Well, there's a little thing called due diligence that they have to go through. You know, this owner's claiming to make $100,000 a year, $50,000, $500,000 a year. You have to go through and you have to do a due diligence process. You have to go through the books and the records and make sure that they pan out. And when that 2 or 3 or 4 week period of time is done, now you have to talk to the landlord. Can you get a lease? And how long is the lease assignment going to take? Oh, by the way, are you getting an SBA loan? Is there a bank involved? That takes time. Are you coming to the United States on an L1 or an E2 visa? That takes time. So, you know, I often would tell people it takes 6 months to a year before you may have your first sale. Now, maybe you can do it sooner, 3 months, 4 months, but don't bank on that because that's more of the getting lucky part. So I was undercapitalized. I told you how I got rid of my business in Georgia, right? I didn't do it the right way. So I moved here and I had no way of doing things. So I would have failed because my first closing happened 6.5 months later into the business and I didn't have 6.5 months reserve. So I was business broker by day and I would be there. There was the first guy there in the morning. And then at 5 o'clock, I would leave, not because I wanted to, but because I had to, because I was waiting tables at Logan's Roadhouse over on John Young Parkway and Apopka Vineland Road. And I got a job there and I would wait tables from 5:30. Then I'd be home about midnight, 12:30. And I'd do it again the next day. Now I was making really good money waiting tables because it was all about the customer service, but that's not what I wanted to do. I could have sat at home and said, well, I don't need to get up and do that business brokerage so early because I'm tired. I wanted it to push me and force me to be able to do this. So I continued to do that. But we talked earlier, I had a horrible experience when I was waiting tables. I walked out one day and to the date, I had my largest listing that was there. It was a pallet manufacturer, almost $1 million listing. And I walked out of the kitchen area and who was sitting at the table?
In your section.
In my section, yeah. In my section, at my table that I had to go and say, welcome to Logan's, how are you this evening? Oh, can I get you a drink, right? It was the people that I was selling their business. Now they didn't see me and I backtracked back into the kitchen. And I went to the manager. I said, remember when you hired me, I told you I'd do this other thing called business brokerage? He goes, yeah, remember I told you one day there'd be a day where I would leave or I wouldn't be here anymore. But as long as I'm here, I do a great job and I'll give you notice before I leave. He goes, yes. I go, well, today may be a day you may fire me. He goes, why? I go, see those people sitting out there? He goes, yeah, why aren't you out there? I go, because I'm selling their business. And not that I'm ashamed of what I'm doing, because I'm very proud of working hard. But if they see me walk out there to take their order, they're going to lose all confidence in me. I'm probably going to lose the listing or it'll be reassigned to somebody. I can't go out there. So I'm either going to, you either send me home, you fire me, or let me stay here until they leave. And he laughed. He goes, you've always been honest with me. Wait till they leave and go back out there. But I needed to work. I did not have the money. So why do most people fail? They just don't have the wherewithal to be in it. So I tell people, don't get in this business unless you at least have 6 months reserved. Because what happens is, just when they're getting to where they're good, they have some listings and things are getting good for them, now they're out of money. And they have to, and so they fail. So that's why. Money.
Yeah. Undercapitalized is probably... I heard... one of my partners told me this, is businesses fail for lack of customers or lack of capital, right? And, you know, starting business brokering, that's, you're essentially an entrepreneur who's building a business, helping other businesses exit or buy or acquire or merge, right? So being undercapitalized, you know, is a really painful thing. How do you suggest someone who's interested in becoming a business broker, how do you even get started in that? And how do you work with them to get that 6 months of savings? You know, I think there's a stat that says 95% of America doesn't have a savings account or emergency savings or a month of savings, right? So then how can anybody become a business broker, right?
I give them two options.
Yeah.
I said, you could do like I did.
Yep.
Because I didn't have 6 months. And so I'm living proof 20 years later. And oh, by the way, after 6 months, after I had my first closing and then my second closing that same week, I've never had to go back to waiting tables or take another job. So, you know, you can do it the way I did and work really hard. And it's not easy, but nothing in life that is worthwhile and that is going to do phenomenal things for you and your life and your family, it comes easy. So it's hard work. Or if you just don't want to work that hard, I say, well, maybe business brokerage isn't for you. But if you really just can't or don't want to, you really have to come up with a plan. How are you going to be able to put money aside to do this? Because I've had people say, can I do this part-time? I'm like, no. And they're like, why? I go, because let's say you get a listing, right? And now you're marketing the listing and someone's coming in to town from out of state or out of the country to look at that listing and they can only see it on Thursday and Friday. Well, you work your other job on Thursday or Friday because you're only doing this part-time. What are you going to do? Now you're going to bring another broker in to show those buyers around and now you're sharing half the fee. And not only that, the seller's going to be like, Josh, where are you? Why aren't you here with me? Why, you know, I thought you were representing me. I have buyers coming through my business and you're not here. So it just doesn't set you up for success. So it's very difficult to do this part-time. It's not a part-time job. The part-timers in this business fail. So I tell people, you know, get at least 6 months of reserves. You know, if you can't do that, work another job or see if there's anyone that could, you know, financially back you. You know, you have family or that will support you while you're doing this.
Yeah.
But if you don't have all of that and you're not willing to take on a second job, don't do this because you're going to fail. It's just, you know, that's just the numbers. I mean, unless you plan on living out of your car, which is, again, nothing wrong if that's how you want, but unless and not be able to eat and not be able to do the things you need to do, you know, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. This is a business where you have to be able to, you know, you could go 6 months to a year without a closing, but then you can have a closing and make $50,000 or $100,000. Right. So it's greater the risk, greater the reward. So, yeah, you go there are big gaps between times where you earn. And so not only are you in this business, you know, what does it take to be in this business? You have to learn what does it take to stay in this business. That means once you have a closing, don't go crazy and spend it all. You need to budget yourself to make sure that, OK, I'm OK for the next 6 months to the year. So you can't just go gangbusters once you have your first big closing.
Sure. Absolutely. We mentioned that you came from a service-based background, painting contractor, and now you specialize in helping service-based businesses exit their companies. Kind of walk us through like what most service-based businesses kind of get themselves into trouble by not running their business well or preparing for an exit. Could you kind of walk us through on what service-based businesses should do to prepare for one day having an exit or even maybe giving it to their kids or something? Could you walk us through some of the things that a service-based business should focus on?
Okay, so we already talked about don't turn your beeper, which we don't have anymore, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Or your phone numbers over to somebody and just walk away from it. So that's not a good thing. You know, I was in the paint contracting business and remodeling business, but I often say I'm not the guy you wanted to see show up to paint your house because I was horrible at that. So I could do sales and marketing and take care of that. But what I think is important for service-related businesses to understand, especially here in Central Florida, up and down the I-4 corridor, right, and throughout the state of Florida, unless you're Disney or Universal, right, Disney's probably the biggest employer of everyone that we know, you know, and they provide, you know, they have a theme park to go to, but most of the larger type businesses in this state are service related. We're not a big manufacturing state, not yet, right? Although we're getting better and we're building and growing that. But, you know, we are a great state of service companies. There are a lot of great lawn care companies, right? Because the sun shines, it rains, you know, the grass grows, it needs to be cut, right? Whether it be residential, commercial, roofing, right? The roofs take a beating from the sun, right? And all different kind of roofs, right? You have HVAC, they say air conditioning's a luxury, not when you live in Florida when it's, you know, 95 plus degrees, you know, 7-8 months out of the year, whatever it is, you know, when your air conditioning goes down, you're finding a way to have it fixed. So it's almost more of a necessity than a luxury. So you look at companies like the plumbing contractors, you look at service related businesses, and it doesn't always have to be in the construction related field. There are plenty of other service type related businesses that are out there, but service is just king. You know, especially in the Central Florida area. And a lot of times people will start their service businesses and we call them chucking a truck, right? It's one person, one truck, and they go out there and they do the service. And if they're fortunate enough, it's like a gentleman that I met with in the roofing industry down in the South Florida area last week. He started working with his family at 18 years old, and now he has a company doing $28 million in sales, right? You know, that can happen also. there's room to grow in these service type companies. But the biggest mistake people make in these companies are, one, they don't take enough time in creating a plan, right? A plan for their business and even an exit strategy, because a business is the one thing that provides for everything in your life, right? It pays for your house. It pays for your car. It pays for your family. It pays for your vacations. It pays for your food. It pays for your retirement. You're spending more time at your business than you are at your home, right? You're spending all this time. So you should always be setting up for the time period when you're going to get out of that business. And that's the biggest mistake business owners don't make. I've sat with so many business owners that, and regardless of the industry, that were so proud that, you know, last year, I was able to shrink my bottom line so much, and I there's $20,000 or $30,000 extra dollars I didn't have to pay tax on. I'm like, all right, let's say it's $100,000 that you didn't have to pay tax on. Let's just use money. So let's say you're in a 30%, 35% tax rate, right? So you save $30,000 or $35,000. Are you happy with that? Yeah, that's a lot of money. I go, well, you know, businesses sell for a multiple of earnings. And if you're hiding money, we can't get that for you. You've already taken that. So now all of a sudden, that $30,000, that $100,000, whatever it is that you didn't pay tax on, that you saved 30% of that number, that $100,000, so you saved $35,000. If I had that $100,000 verifiable on the books and I could take it to market, it could be worth anywhere from 2 to 5 times that. So that $30,000 you saved just cost yourself $200,000 to $600,000 possibly. That's a lot of money. And even if it's $10,000 you saved in taxes, it's still, $20,000 to $50,000 that you potentially cost yourself in the sale of a business to save, what, $5,000, $10,000? So sometimes we're short-sighted. So it's run your business on the up and up, because not only for tax purposes, how are you going to get financing for a business, right? If you can't show the numbers, the bank is not going to lend the money. They're not going to care. Well, I hear this all the time. Well, what about the intangible value of my company? It has to be worth a lot more, because I've been in business 20 years and I've done all these wonderful things and everybody knows who I am. And I go, yes. You want to know what the intangible value of your business is worth? You want to know what your name is worth? I said, for the last 5 years, you're showing sales of $1 million a year. All that great reputation that you have out in the marketplace and everything wonderful that you're doing that everybody knows you is leading to you getting $1 million a year in sales for the last 5 years. That's how I can quantify it. Because if it was much greater than that, your sales would be higher, right? So all the great things that you're doing, that's what it is. So it all still all comes back to the numbers. We always tie it back to the numbers. So a bank can't lend on what they can't see. And not only that, if you're a buyer, right? You're looking at someone and you're negotiating with them and they tell you, yeah, but there's a lot more money here, wink, wink. Now all of a sudden you're sitting there saying, okay, so I'm negotiating with someone that's not honest, right? And I'm not saying that you're a dishonest person, you're a bad person. Everyone has done it that's been in business to some degree, some a lot worse than others. Yeah. I don't know how some people sleep at night, some of the things I've seen them run through their business. But, at some point you have to say to yourself, okay, well, where's my confidence level in this individual? Because if they're telling me this, but what are they not telling me? So when you go into a business and you're looking at financials that are good books and records, solid, they're all, what they're making is what they're making, and we could show and prove and verify it. Not only is it going to give the buyer more confidence, so they're going to be more buyers that want to buy your business. We can get a higher multiple for the business, because businesses with good books and records, let's say a business sells in a certain industry anywhere in a range of 1.5 to 3. What makes it a 1.5? 1.5 times your net income or your adjusted net income. What makes it 3 times? Well, do you have good books and records, right? Can you verify your numbers? Do you have any one customer that's doing more than, 10% or 20% of your business? Did you have one customer doing 90% of the sales? That makes it a very volatile business or a very unattractive business to buy if you're looking to get all cash. So it brings the value down, because you lose that one customer, you're out of business, So how many years have you been in business? What's your customer concentration? Tell me about your employees. So the more positive answers you get to these questions, the better, higher the multiple you're able to get for your business. So I often tell people, if you want to get the highest maximum value for your business, run it the right way. Do the right thing. Get yourself out of the day-to-day operations of the business as much as you can. Meaning that when someone calls you, Josh, that you want them to be calling your company, not you, because one day you might be gone. And if you're gone, they may say, well, I'm going to call somebody else then. So, you have to just set up your business over time to be in a position where it's attractive to more acquirers. Because look, when you have one buyer,
you have no buyers. When you take your business to market, you want to be able to attract 5 and 10 and 15 people, almost create like an auction atmosphere, because you're going to be able to not just hold your price, maybe do even a little better than that. You're going to be able to maximize. And again, you spent all this time, all your energy, all these hours away from your family, maybe, and doing all these things to run your business. Don't shortchange yourself on the way out. This is when you need to be able to maximize and recoup all the sacrifices you've made for this business. This is your payday.
Yeah. So service-based, I grew up, my father's in construction. I grew up in a service-based business. If you asked my dad those questions, you know, 20 years ago, what's your customer concentration, and you know, take a look at your books. My dad, you know, we swung hammers. We had no clue how to answer those questions. Like, how do you work with, you know, contractors, service-based, to help answer those questions? Because I don't know about them, but we didn't know how to answer those. How do you help them get those answers?
If I meet with 10 new companies this week,
yeah,
I may take one or two of them to market.
Okay.
The other 8 or so, I may not. And it may be because their expectations are different than what I know the market will bear.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to take something to market that I know we can't sell. The statistics are horrific. The 15 to 20% of all businesses listed with a broker actually sell. That means 80 to 85% of the time, there's a failure rate, right? That's horrible. How can you look someone in the eye and say, yes, I'm going to sell your business, and there's an 85% chance I'm not going to get it done? That's horrible. Our statistics have always been, you know, excluding the recession, because everyone did horrible, but we've always been 70% or higher of everything we've taken to market, because we'll walk away from more listings than we take. You want to, if you don't believe in it, you shouldn't take it. It's like any business. If you don't believe in it, you shouldn't do it. So a lot of times, so I meet with an owner and it's not the right time for them to sell. I'm just not shaking their hand and walking away. What I'm doing is I'm saying, okay, what are your goals? I'm telling you your business is worth $250,000 or $2.5 million or $25 million, whatever the size. I'm telling you that's what it's worth, and you're telling me that's not good enough. What is it that you need? And a lot of times I say, well, this is what I need. And okay, well, this is where you need to get. And we come up and we help them come up with a plan to say, okay, you're here and you need to get to this next point. This is where your revenues need to be. This is where your profitability needs to be. And these are the things you need to look at. Look, last year you took on a large job. It was a $250,000 job, but your margins were 5%. You would have been better off taking the other jobs that were less money that made, you know, 25 and 30% profit, but you couldn't take those jobs. You started bypassing those jobs because all your manpower was tied up on the large job. So you wasted the opportunity for the higher profitability on those smaller jobs to chase the whale, right? Because you wanted that big job to say, hey, we did this big job. At the end of the day, it's what am I making? How much money am I making? That's really what counts. So you have to be really careful with the jobs that you take. It's okay to say no. Don't be afraid to say no. Look, in the paint contracting business, in the wintertime in Georgia, it got really cold and you can't paint outside. So yeah, there were times that as a business owner, I would call back the people that we painted their shopping centers or their exterior houses, and I would give them specials to paint the interior of the houses. And as a business owner, I made no money. But I made that choice to keep my guys busy, because sometimes you have to keep your employees happy, because good employees are hard to come by. So sometimes you have to make a sacrifice personally to keep your people happy. And this way, when the good times come around, the sun was out again, when someone comes offering them 50 more cents or a dollar more an hour, they're not jumping ship, because they know when times are tough, you've got their back and you're going to take care of them. So we help with that. I think the best thing that we can do is, I often say, I don't sell businesses, right? I help manage expectations, but I also help educate the client. I go into every engagement with how can I explain to you what the process is, because the statistics tell us that people that are going to sell their business or buy a business, it's the first time they've ever done that, and probably the only time they're going to do that. So they need someone to sit down with them and not just blow them smoke, you know, and say, hey, well, I'm the biggest and the best and I sell all of these and I've got 10 others just like yours and they'll sell and that's what it's going to do. What do you want? Great. The market will dictate the price and we'll go to market. No, they need someone that's going to be honest with them. They need someone that's going to tell them, no, it's not going to sell for that price range, and this is why, and this is what it's worth. I mean, and this is why it's worth that. So educating the client. And again, a lot of times that means today is not the right day for you to sell unless you want to get less than what you feel like you need. Now, sometimes people don't realize what they need. They come and say, well, I need $500,000 or $1 million to retire. Well, how do you know you need that? Well, because I'm in this tax bracket. I go, have you talked with a good financial planner or a wealth manager?
because, you know, it's not how much you get from the proceeds of the sale. It's what are you going to do with that? So we like to introduce them to people like that, like wealth management people and good CPAs and even good attorneys long before they need them, so they can help and structure themselves in a way that they can retire. So great. We had a gentleman that sold a business in Lakeland, $7 million transaction. He had come to us years earlier and just wasn't ready to sell. Well, he walked in one day with a huge stack of paperwork, and he says, give this to Chris Diglio. And so they walk into my office, and they give me this stack of paperwork. I'm like, what is that? Well, gentleman you met with about 5 years ago dropped this off, and he said to give him a call. Well, I knew who it was, so I call him up, and I'm like, you know, what's going on? Well, thank you. When you met with us 5 years ago, you told us what we needed to do, where we needed to be, and how we needed to get there. He goes, we're still not there, although we're much better off than where we were, but I have no choice at this point. I have to sell. He goes, I went to the doctor and I have cancer. Well, that's the worst thing you ever want to hear someone sell. Now, they're a very motivated seller, but you never want to hear someone that I'm a cancer survivor myself for 30 years. You'd never want to hear someone come into your office and tell you that. But, you know, what happened was, though, he said, I have an offer on the table for $5 million with $3 million down, and I want to take it. I said, my dad and I said, well, hold on a second. Let us take a look at the financials. I know time is of the essence, and let's go through it. Well, we went through it and we said, look, we can get you much more than that. Let us at least make a few phone calls for you and see what we can do. Now, he said, thank you so much for 5 years earlier telling me what I needed to do. Now, I didn't reach my goal of where I wanted to be with the sales, but because he listened and because we were able to help him, he was in a position where he could go to market at any time. He was prepared for a sale even when he wasn't, or he didn't think he was going to have to sell. So we made a few calls. And we wound up, I called a friend of mine. He works for, he's part of a private equity company called KLH. They're based out of the Tampa area. His name is Kyle Madden. And his group looked at it. And they came in and they wound up buying the company for $7 million with $5 million down. So we got him $2 million more than he thought he was going to get in the other transaction, $2 million more down. Now, if we would have had time and truly been able to implement a marketing strategy and get more than just one or two people interested, that company was probably worth $10 million. But still, because he was prepared and he was ready for sale and he knew to call us back because we treated him right, you know, 5 years earlier and gave him good advice and didn't just kick him out of the office and said, sorry, we can't help you. He came in, called us back. And the best part of the story, Josh, by the way, is years later, cancer's completely gone and he's fully healthy, enjoying retirement. So that's the best part of the story. The second best part, he was able to get enough money to be able to do all that. But to the business owners, always have yourself in a position to be ready to sell. Do the right thing, even though it might cost you pennies. The pennies it costs you today will be dollars in your pocket tomorrow. That could be the difference between whether you sell or not.
Nice. If you had to say, the biggest mistake that you see service-based businesses before they go to sell, what would you say is the number one business that is losing them millions of dollars? Like, what's the number one problem that these people might be doing?
Okay, so in service-related businesses, you know, what if you look at a company and you analyze it and say, what are they doing wrong or what can they improve on? Most of the time, it's just hiding money, right? Because they're in there, and we've talked ad nauseum about that, right? They're in their head that they're not going to put everything on the books and it's just not worth it, but the biggest mistake someone makes during the sale process, I think it may be a better thing for the audience to hear because we talked about the things not to do, is probably, you know, just because it's listed for sale, we see people take their foot off the gas. They say, well, my business is listed. I'm going to get $500,000 and it's going to sell. Well, they take their foot off the gas and they stop doing what they do well every day. They're already retired on the beach in the really bad Hawaiian shirt or just sipping their adult beverages, right? And in their mind, they're retired. So now all of a sudden, 3 months later, we get someone that's interested in the business and they say, let's see updated financials. And we see over the last 90 days, it's tanked. Now all of a sudden, they're not getting that money for the business, the $500,000. They thought someone's coming in and they're making an offer on a business that's declining. Look, when a business is going up in revenue, you know, you're shooting at a target that you want to shoot at because it's going up. So you're going to get your price. When it starts coming down in revenue, buyers are smart. They're saying, well, okay, based on where you're at today, it might be worth $350, but wow, you're going down. So I'm only willing to pay $275. So it's going in the wrong way, and that's not the time to sell. So you have to be really cautious. Then the other problem people make, let's say they don't do that. They keep their foot on the gas and they're going strong. Now we have it under contract. Well, we've seen people then take their foot off the gas and say, well, it's sold. We're under contract. Well, so many things. Our job, the toughest part of our job is not getting the listing, not getting the buyer, and not getting the contract. It's going from contract to closing. That's when deals fall apart. So we talk to people and tell them, don't take your foot off the gas, even if it's under contract, because what's going to happen right before closing, let's say there's a bank finance, a bank doing financing. The bank's going to request to see the last, you know, last 30 days or so, what, you know, the most recent P&L statements. And if they see revenue going down, they're not going to lend the money. If it's an individual investor that's buying the business, he's going to look at the most recent financials. And if he sees they've gone down from the time you went under contract, he's going to want to renegotiate. And you're going to cost yourself, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the size of the business at closing, or cost yourself a sale, which is even worse because you couldn't take the last 30 or 60 days to go through a due diligence period. So we talk to our clients ahead of time about what not to do once you get into a transaction, because what to do is easy. What not to do is the things that'll kill you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what not to do are the things you got to really look out for.
Oh, yeah. What not to do, you know, and please listen. We know what we're talking about. You know, everyone thinks they're going to fool. The buyer's not going to look. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
What's the, this is just some fun questions. What is the largest dollar amount business that you've ever participated in selling?
It was a paper manufacturer in the state of Florida doing about over $100 million enterprise value. So they were doing hundreds of million in sales. They were worth about a little over $100 million. I was not the lead on that, but I was part of that. And that was exciting. One year I was involved. I was part of, at the time, the largest franchise system in the world, Sunbelt. And in 2011 or 12, I was the largest. I had the largest sale of any company in the entire system. So that was exciting. So when you start talking those numbers, they're ridiculous. What I often tell business brokers, I said, you need to know which pool you want to swim in. You want to be a Main Street business broker, which is typically deals under $1 million, or do you want to go lower middle market, which will be, you know, sale price of $2 million upwards of over $100 million, you know, because it's two different skill sets, two different mind frames, total different verbiage and things that, you know, what you're looking for in Main Street business brokers, you're talking about owner benefit. And in M&A world, you're talking EBITDA. And people, you know, I would say, sounds like a fraud, right? EBIT, you know, they joke, but EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, an average business broker that's selling the Main Street brokerage is just not going to understand that terminology. So it's, you really just need to know what it is. But you're the largest business, you know, upwards of over $100 million. And it was a lot of fun. You know, deals die all the time. When you lose a deal that you're going to make a $10,000 commission on, that hurts. Because it's still a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
When you lose a deal where there's over $1 million in commissions, that not only hurts, that hurts for a long time,
yeah.
You know, when they don't close. So yeah, they're life-changing when you're able to close those deals, but I often say you can't really count on those.
Nice. Yeah, chasing whales, you mentioned that earlier, is you could starve to death chasing whales, right?
But there's a great niche. Like our company at Calder Associates, we're very successful in the $5 to $50 million range.
Yeah.
Not because we're not good at $100 and $200 million companies. We are, and we sell them. But there are a lot more companies that are valued between $5 and $50 million than $50 and $100 million. So there's just more opportunity in that space, and we do a great job there.
Yeah, bigger pool there.
Yeah.
Right? For people listening in, what questions should I have asked you that I didn't ask you, that I totally missed the mark?
You know, I always love that question because I do a podcast for the IBBA, and I always throw that question out to the person I'm talking to. I think the question that's important to any business owner or business buyer even that's out there that's thinking about jumping into, you know, being their own boss, living the American dream, you know, I think what's important for them to know is, you know, what is it involved in that? You know, what does it mean? And I think what it means is really understanding of what it is you're going to do. Because, you know, they say the grass is always greener on the other side. And the truth is, it's just a different shade of green, right? There are issues. There's no such thing as the perfect business. I've had people, I'll use my brother-in-law as an example. And when he listens to this, he'll probably yell at me. But my first year in business brokerage, he was working for a very large construction company. They were building multifamily houses, apartment complexes, and he was the GC, right? The general contractor, and he had thousands of people working underneath him, right? So he was looking at a custom closet company, which he ultimately bought, and he wound up quadrupling in size, did a phenomenal job with it. But I remember the day he first looked at it. My father and I were talking to Ben about it, and Ben laughed. He goes, oh, this company has 15 or 20 employees. He goes, I'm going to be bored. I'm not going to know what to do. I have thousands of people working underneath me. Well, there's a difference of thousands of people working underneath you when all your job is to manage them. There's another difference between 10 people or 15 people working underneath you when your job is not only to manage them, but to make sure payroll is in place, to make sure the scheduling is in place, and to make sure when the light bulb gets out, it gets changed, right? You're wearing so many hats as a business owner. So we laughed, and we laughed back at him. We go, okay, yeah, okay, talk to us in 90 days. I remember him coming back. We're sitting around the table at my parents' house having a barbecue, and he looked at us, and he laughed. He goes, you guys were right. He goes, I don't know what to do. Forget the fact that I thought I was going to be bored. I don't have enough hours in the day to take care of this because there's so much responsibility. So I think the biggest advice I can give to someone is, as far as what's involved, is don't fool yourself into thinking just because you own a business that you're living the easy life, you're living the retired life. Because when your employee goes home at night, you're still wondering, you know, how am I going to make payroll? You know, what's going on with the one job? Or the weather's bad outside today. I'm not going to be able to lay that pavement, you know, tomorrow, or do seal coating tomorrow, or paint the house, or put the roof on, or whatever I'm going to do, which is going to throw off our entire schedule for everything else we do. So, you know, the grass is not greener on the other side. There's a lot more responsibility that goes into it, and just be prepared for it. And I remember my dad telling me this story, which is he had a husband and wife that came and sat down with him, and their dream was to buy a business, and they wanted to buy a bar. And my dad goes through that. We go through this buyer profile with them, the likes, dislikes, what you've done, what you haven't. And the very last questions we ask are financial, because we really want to get to know the individual. And the very last thing he said to him, he looked at the gentleman. He said, do you love your wife? He goes, oh, very much. Looks at the wife. Do you love your husband? Oh, I love him so much. My father said, don't buy a bar. He said, you sat here and when we talked about your desires in life, what you want to do, you said you wanted to start a family. You don't have one yet. Well, right now you guys love the bar atmosphere. You're there to all hours of the night. You love hanging out. You think it's the greatest thing in the world. Well, now you have a child. Are you planning on one of you? I don't care which one of you planning on staying home with the child? Yes. Okay, so that means now someone's going to be home with the child all day long and the other person's going to be wee hours of the night. You're never going to see each other. It's going to put a strain on your relationship. So he brought, now this is probably, you know, a $75,000 commission he would have made by selling them this business, but he opened and enlightened them to what really went into running this particular business. So in buying a business, really understand what it's going to take. In selling a business, really understand what is it going to take to get out of that business, because those are the most important things you do. Because if you truly understand what it's going to take, you'll be successful both at getting in and getting out.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. That's good. And your dad turned down the commission essentially to do what's best for the customer.
He told me when I first got in the business at 28 years old, he goes, you could do what's in your best interest today and make a commission, or you could do what's in the best interest of the client and make a career out of it. So 20 years later, I followed his advice and have made a career out of this.
That's good. For people listening in, where can people find out more information about you and how to connect with you?
I always tell people they can go to IBBA.org if they want to know anything about getting into business brokerage. But those people that are looking at buying or selling a business, I'm very easy to get a hold of. My name is Cress, C-R-E-S-S, Diglio. There aren't too many Cresses out there. You could Google my name. My own personal website's Florida. You can go to CalderAssociates.com, and that'll bring you to my page. Or you can just call me on my cell phone. Now, this is the death wish to ever give your cell phone out on a podcast because you get the crank calls. But I've had the same number for 20 years, and I answer my phone 407-709-9605, and I'll gladly talk to you. Most of the time I have people call me. They go to my website, FloridaCertifiedBusinessBroker.com. That's another website. And they call me and they just ask for advice. And I'm the first one that'll give as much advice as I can, because most of the people I talk to aren't ready to sell or aren't ready to buy, and they just need that little bit of advice. And it's just about building relationships, because although I've been doing this 20 years, I'm going to be doing it another 20 years. If I meet you today, it might not be the right time. It could be like that gentleman that walked in 5 years later, and that'll be the right time. I'll still be here. So feel free to call me, reach out to me. I'll help you any way that I possibly can.
Awesome, man. Well, Chris, thanks for coming on the show and sharing your experience and how you went from a service-based business, had an exit through a pager, and to helping people now buy and sell businesses. So thanks for listening in, audience. We really enjoyed this conversation. You could go down to the show notes and you'll see links to his websites and to find out more information about him and the IBBA. But until then, we'll talk with you all on the next episode. Have a lovely day and drive safely if you're driving. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.